Oh, sitting in Big Jim's garage and talking NASCAR this morning. Matt Yoakam back like he promised. Hi, Matt. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Fantastic. So you prognosticated it was going to come down to Logano and Harvick. You were pretty damn close. You were halfway there with Joey. So, yeah, you are the guy. So can you predict the rest of the season for the Lions up here in Detroit?
Okay, that would be like me putting on a blindfold and then being in the dark and then throwing a dart. And at some point in time, you're going to hit something. But with the Lions, the way they are this year, what are they, 4-6 now?
Yeah, 4-6.
I mean, I don't think I would hit anything.
Get in line. They are the biggest tease. And it was funny because I was thinking about the parallels with Logano. We've all seen the talent. We know he's close. And he'd been kind of a tease with Penske. And then he put it all together yesterday. It was a great race. I don't know how you felt about it, but God, that was fun to watch.
This is what I love about the NASCAR playoffs, in that, you know, years ago, you go, all right, well, if he finishes 37th or better, you know, there's still that chance he could blow up and then we could give it to somebody else. I love the fact that you get into an opportunity where the situation is level going into the season finale. It's like going to the Super Bowl. All right, the playing field is set, mano a mano, and basically – you have to execute. You have to play your best on that day to show that you are the champion. And it's a team sport in NASCAR, just like it is in the NFL. And I felt like the cream rose to the top. And when you saw throughout the day, the 22 team continued to execute the best I've seen them execute all year on pit road. Great calls from the pit box with crew chief Todd Gordon. But Joey was on it. And I love the line that he said to one of the crew guys as he was getting in the car. He says, I'm getting in a driver. I'm going to get out a champion.
Now, all that being said, and everybody, you know, there was a point where we had the top four guys at a restart. I mean, come on. You couldn't script that any better than that. To have the four guys fighting for the title were 1 through 4 in the first two rows of a restart. Did tires play too much of a factor in this race, or do they play too much of a factor?
I don't think they really played a factor like some people might have thought they would have. To me, I just felt like the way that this race starts in the day, ends at night, you go through a number of transitions, so it makes you the athlete, the driver, the crew chief. You have to adjust. And it's like going into a football game, or if you're the Tigers, you got to go to the bullpen 9 times. You know, you keep adjusting as far as what the play demands. You have to call the strategy play. Like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and go to the bullpen. I'm going to bring out a lefty because the next two people coming up, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And this racetrack at Homestead, a number of people are like, hey, we need to change it. We need to rotate it like the Super Bowl. I think you are totally going to mess up what is the epic battle each year, because it's the great racetrack for this type of situation. And if you looked at it, and you mentioned it there, Big Jim, you looked up at one point in time, a couple different times, actually, where you had the top four going for the championship were fourth, you know, or better on the grid.
What else can you ask for as a fan of the sport,
exactly,
or any sport? Yeah. It was.
And you're sitting there, you're like, oh, my God, I cannot believe this. You know, this is what you hope for. So many times you're like, oh, the Super Bowl is 63-12. You know, or you go into the national championship game for college football. And especially if Michigan's in it, you know, it'll be whoever's playing Michigan will have 60 and Michigan will have 11.
Oh, look at you, Slappy. Okay, bam, whatever.
My mom's a Sparty, so I have to go ahead and stick up for it. But, you know, I'm trying to say, so many times you go in, it's all the buildup. And then you get to the game and it doesn't turn out like you want.
Well, think about what's going on right now in the NBA. Matt. The NBA is entirely focused on where is Kevin Durant going to go next year. We're in November. We're less than 20-something games in the NBA season, and we've already given the title to Golden State. We're more interested in will Kevin Durant go play for the Lakers next year. We don't even care about the current season. And then you get into certain sports like Formula One, where it's basically which one of the six drivers are going to win, because there's only six cars who can win. And then you look at NASCAR, and I'm like, we got to the finale. You had a great race. You didn't know who was going to win. You had personalities. You had conflict. You had a raw emotion afterwards from Martin Truex Jr. I don't know what else people want from a finale, because it was a pretty damn great day.
I don't see how you could get anything better. And I laugh when you go on social media. And many times, it's just not auto racing. It's every sport. I think many instances, social media is the worst thing that ever happened. There are so many great things about it. And I think if you're a fan, at least, I don't see it as much with other sports. And I don't follow a lot of athletes from other sports, so I can't say honestly this is indeed the case. But it just seems like in racing, whether it's NASCAR, whether it's the IndyCars that come to Belle Isle, you know, the IMSA series that comes to Belle Isle, you look at these athletes that are in racing, a lot of social interaction on social media. And I also think, though, the bad part about it is you see a lot of the fans. When the incident happened that involved Brad Keselowski and the 19 of Daniel Suarez,
right. They're
like, yeah, there you go. You know, the 19, he's bringing it out just to help his teammate, the 18, because he needed the caution. Well, if you back up the tape and you could see how the entire incident took place, but you've got people on social media bashing. I'm just like, you know what? It's sport. Things happen, and that's why we go, because it's not scripted. And it creates storylines, and you've got to adjust to those storylines. So to me, I just think that what you've seen this past weekend was another fantastic NASCAR moment, really.
It's interesting to me, too. We got Matt Yocum with us, at Matt Yocum on Twitter, of course, Fox. We only got, 90 days to get ready for Daytona?
I know it. It's hard to believe.
It's we're not joking, folks.
Off-season. Yeah.
That's insane. What was it when Joey went around Martin for the pass that, you know, got him the championship? I started talking like Robert Duvall, and I said, you got a Cole, you got a perfectly set of tires. It'll hold. Just stick it on the outside. I mean, you were saying how Logano throws himself in there. Holy crap. That car was either going to pass him or he was going to go flying off that track like Fireball Roberts. There was no middle ground.
It's such a great line. I think it's from Bull Durham, the movie. And he's like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm going to show my presence with authority.
I'm going to announce my presence with authority. That's what he did.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Joey Logano did. And I watched that race from the get-go, and I saw early on, I'm like, wow. Okay, if you notice Logano, after the restarts, like two laps after the restart, man, he had a rocket. He was the best car on a short run. And I said to myself, man, if we get down to the end of this race and there's a caution with 25 to go, this is going to be really interesting because this could fall right into Logano's lap. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, the power move that he did around the 78 of Martin Truex was really incredible. And it was almost like he made that move and the wind completely went out of everybody else's sails because Logano opened up like a 2-second lead. And, yeah. And you're sitting there as things are winding down and you're going, wow, think about this kid. So, and there's, you know, you've got the Joey haters, you got the folks that love Joey. But I think if you look at Joey and Big Jim, what's so impressive to me is you look at how he got to where he was there yesterday. He was shoved along a year early because Tony Stewart left Gibbs to go to Stewart Haas.
Right.
Logano was going to have another year in Xfinity, which is NASCAR's, you know, it's like the Toledo Mud Hens in baseball for the Tigers. But yet he got shoved ahead to a championship-winning team that I don't think we're prepared to deal with the rocky road that you're going to have with a rookie. And it just went downhill from there. Everybody lost confidence in everybody. Roger Penske gave him a second chance, and he capitalized on it. And that's what I kept thinking to myself. This is the true American story. You see it so many times in the auto industry. Or, you know, you look at the 68 Tigers and just blue-collar work ethic and a second chance – and he didn't let it go to waste. He capitalized on it. And that's what really stuck in my mind as I saw those final few laps wind down.
I always say to people, like, it's funny, if you look back at Harvick, nobody liked Harvick when he first started. I mean, it was Happy Harvick was sort of a smartass. It was a shot at him. And I'm not saying the good old boy network, but something about the Southern accent. You can get away with saying things that you couldn't say if you're from Connecticut or Bakersfield, California, right? You can
absolutely.
Because that's always. I lived in Charleston. I was in the Navy, and the running joke was like, when a Southern woman says "I do declare," that's because she doesn't want to say "f you." So that was like, well, "I do declare."
Absolutely. Or you hear the old saying, "I don't believe I really know her parents, or I know his parents." That's another big slam. And I think if you're Elliot Sadler, you could say some incredible stuff. You're like, I don't know if he just said that I'm going to be his best friend. or if he wants to mow me over with the car.
Right.
Because they say it. They say it in such a way that you're like, wow, I don't know if that was a compliment or if I just got slammed big time.
But Joey would say something and people would just, he's like, I'm going to race him hard and I'm not, you know, I got to go out there and win. Everyone's like, yep. I hate Logano. And then Elliot or someone goes, man, let's run him up in the corner. You know, I'm racing him hard. Racing's Rubbin. They're like, damn right, Rubbin's racing. Like, Logano needs to talk with a twang.
It's so funny about Joey because this is what I find so interesting. You look at Tom Brady, and to me, I see a lot of similarities between Tom Brady and Jimmy Johnson. But you look at the confidence that Tom Brady has. And it's like that scene from the draft day with Kevin Costner. And they're talking about how Joe Montana in the huddle is like, hey, man, look over there. Isn't that John Candy?
Right.
And they're all like, what? And it totally took the stress out of the situation. And to me, I find it really cool to look at an athlete who has the confidence that, hey, I'm here and I'm going to do this. And Joey Logano, he fired the shot. Because, look, there's so many mind games that are being played. I mean, you've seen it in so many different sports. But on media day for Homestead, and you saw it this past week, Truex, well, the only person I may have to wreck would be Logano. I mean, just trying to fire a shot. Tony Stewart was the master at it with Carl Edwards, you know, 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
7 years ago. And he had Carl, whoa, calm down here, whoa, you know. And that's what's so funny is that how the athlete, you know, sometimes they can't back it up. But Logano backed it up. He had the confidence in himself. But that comes from the leadership of Roger Penske. And Mr. Penske, to me, the greatest auto racing owner of all time. On top of that, he's even a greater person. And you look at what he does for his people and why the turnover. I used a stat earlier this year when I was doing an IMSA race. The average tenure of an employee at Penske Racing, Team Penske, was 8+ years. And in our business, that might as well have been 40.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen. Well, I can tell you, Matt.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I'll tell you a little bit about Penske. When Rogers helped us out with the radio station and doing stuff here with CSX over the years, like when you go out to Belle Isle and he's riding around during the Detroit Grand Prix and he's on his little scooter and he's in the pit, he's in there, you know, back there in the pits and you see him,
mm-hmm.
He sees and remembers everyone's name. And it's the freakiest thing in the world. He pulled up and we used to build a car 10 years ago for charity called the Stone Soup car. And he pulls up next to me and goes, how's that GTO? That's 66, man. That was a great car. I remember that. And you're going, how? How did you remember that? That was a decade ago. And he was asking me about people, and he always knows folks by name. And when you interview him, he is such a gearhead. And I don't know if, Matt, if people really understand that before, was it Chevy that told him, you're either going to run car dealerships or you're going to be a race car driver, but you can't do both. Because he was on the cover of SI at one point.
Yep, he was the SI Racer of the Year and Driver of the Year. And he had to make that decision, go business or go racing. And Chevy said, look, if you want to own the dealership, you can't be driving. And, you know, again, the guys, I mean, he not only sees the forest through the trees, he sees on to the next forest.
Yeah.
His vision is incredible. And I've heard him say it so many times that his number one resource is human capital. And he knows how to get the best out of people. But this is the thing. Quality follows him. And when you can surround yourself with quality people who are very unselfish, so many great things can happen. And that's the feeling. When you walk over to Team Penske, which is about 15 minutes from my house, and you walk through the shop, that's the one thing that you notice. I mean, there's no IN team there.
Yeah. That's the last thing I wanted to touch on with you. Matt Yocum with us this morning. We're talking about Joey Logano, obviously, Homestead yesterday. We did have a team order. I don't know if it was a team order or Hamlin. What was interesting to me was Hamlin gets the pole, gives the pit box to Kyle Busch.
Yep.
Last year, Denny gets the pole, doesn't give it to Martin Truex Jr. Right?
Well, absolutely. It was a total Joe Gibbs call. It was a total team order. And basically, they were like, okay, last year, although they were corporate teammates, you know, with Toyota, this year it was teammate to teammate. And so basically the 11 team was told, all right, don't pick stall number one. You choose the next best stall, which was four, because there was an opening between three and four,
right,
the way this pit road works at Homestead. And so they allowed their teammate to have the very first pit stall because they qualified second, and then therefore they would have the second choice. So, I mean, total gamesmanship, smart move, and it was the move to make if you were in that situation.
Well, and does, like I said, my question is, are we getting to the point now where, not so much team orders, but I think that, you know, the Ford winning their first, what, manufacturer title since 2004?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, the,
yep,
you know, getting out there. And we heard more talk yesterday and over the weekend about more manufacturers coming into the sport. I mean, we don't really know who it's going to be. Volkswagen's a name I've heard bounced around, but, you know, that's just, like everything else, just a rumor at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Does this pull us closer to the whole team order thing, where maybe we're managing teams as a whole more than we are individual drivers?
Well, I think so much of that goes on anyway that really isn't on the radar, so to speak. And it's not big, impactful stuff that stands out like the pit stall selection process at Homestead. There's so much that goes on as far as helping teammates. And it's just like when you have a corporate teammate, like when Stuart Haas had their association with Hendrick Motorsports. I mean, Jeff Gordon told me so many times he had access to all the data from Kevin Harvick at Phoenix, and he could see where Kevin Harvick was making up all of his time, where he was fast. And he knew the setup that Kevin Harvick had because they exchanged information back and forth. And they weren't teammates. They were corporate teammates due to their business relationship. But at the end of the day, he says, you know what? I still don't know how he did it. I can see how he did it, but I don't know how he did it. And there's so much that goes on in the sport. Unless you turn back the time and you go back to where you say, okay, you can only have one or two cars if you're a team owner, which the business model would not support now, you know, you wouldn't be able to have the situation today as you would then. But the economics, you know, this is how we have to do it. But it's not like F1, never be like F1.
No.
Where you've got Michael Schumacher who is said, okay, you are going to win today. And then I can remember who it was that was his, you know, who his teammate was, and he basically had to pull over. So, but yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it creates drama. If you're a Joe Gibbs hater, man, you are all fired up and all over the social media, Facebook, Twitter, you know, saying how upset you were. But to me, I think it's just another great storyline of a fantastic sport in what is our Super Bowl. I know the Daytona 500 is our Super Bowl of stock car racing, but boy, when you look at the hype and the championship and everything that goes into Homestead, it has that same feeling.
Totally agree, Matt. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, because you and I get to talk about it, we found the news out after we had done our podcast last week, David Pearson passing away. I grew up out in California, and I got to see him when I was a kid at Riverside Raceway. I sat up on the hill and watched them cut through the dirt and watching. And I became, as a kid, I don't know, it was something about him. I just became, just the Silver Fox to me was just cool, the way he drove and the way he would come out of nowhere. And the last, what would they say, the last eight laps of any race with David Pearson, you better check in your rearview mirror, because he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Always. He was so far ahead of the curve, pardon the racing pun, but he was so far ahead of the curve when it came to that. I don't think people even knew what his strategy was.
One of the smartest drivers ever to climb behind the wheel. And I was on the Kyle Petty charity ride about 8 or 9 years ago, and Pearson was actually on it that year. And we were at a charity stop, and the announcer said, okay, you know, we're asking fans questions, and one fan goes, all right, who was the better driver, King, you or David Pearson? And they're sitting side by side. And everybody laughed, and the King pointed right at Pearson. And then the person asked, all right, he goes, well, who? He goes, sit right next to me. It's Pearson. They go, well, Pearson, what do you think about that? He goes, well, I'm not going to argue with him.
Now, unless I'm mistaken, Pearson and the Wood Brothers then only ran to try to run all the races to win a championship three times, and he won all three when they decided to sit out for the whole year.
Well, when you look at his career, and that's what's so amazing, is, you know, in the 60s, started out with Cotton Owens. His very first win came on three tires because he had a flat tire, and he drove for the last couple laps on the rim. You know, he won three championships at Holman Moody, and then he went to the Wood Brothers, and that's where it really just seemed his aura, his mystique of the Silver Fox.
Yeah.
And that's where it really started, because he was so smart. At Daytona one year for the 4th of July race, they're coming down to take the white flag, and all of a sudden he pulls over to the inside leading, and the King, Richard Petty, shoots around the outside of him because he thought Pearson had a problem. No, Pearson was setting up the King, faked. He threw him a fake like he had a motor problem, dove in behind him, and then set him up for the slingshot down the back straightaway to go ahead and score the win. And such a great guy, 105 wins, three championships, and he's one of those guys on the Mount Rushmore of auto racing. You know, he ran Le Mans. He won at Daytona in the Rolex 24, driving a Mercury just like his stock car in 76 for a class win. So huge loss of the sport, but boy, he sure gave it so much history, and he left his mark for sure.
I still love Buddy Baker saying when the first time he really realized how good Pearson was, he looked over, and Pearson, people forget, Pearson had a lighter in his car. I mean, you know, he looks over, they're in a caution, he looks over, and Pearson's lighting a cigarette during the race.
That's
cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's some, I can't think who else it was. He said, he's sitting there and he's going down the backstretch and he's all up on the wheel and he's going to try to hold off David Pearson. He looks over and Pearson has one hand on the wheel and the other hand is draped over the roll bar that goes through the middle of the car. Like he's just out for a Sunday. He gets at that point. I knew it was all over and I was done.
What's the one, too? Last thing is that the one that jumped out at me was this. He was talking about how if you ever see David Pearson when he won and he would kiss the girl, the trophy girl, he didn't just kiss trophy girl. He tried to suck her face off, basically. I mean, he went in and his wife got mad at him and said, "You got to quit doing it." He goes, "Honey, it's for the sport. I'm just doing what they're asking me to do." And he started laughing.
He's
like,
just a team player.
Right.
He's just a team player.
That conversation with him and Kyle Petty is one of my favorite interviews that Kyle's ever done, because obviously the relationship with his father, but the way the respect that David pays to Kyle and the conversation, it felt like I was in a room with just two guys talking and we just happened to have a camera on. It's fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I love those Pride of NASCAR pieces that we did at TNT. Those were so fantastic.
Great. Yeah.
You know, it really gave the fan an education of the people who built the sport. So, glad that we're able to do those and glad we're able to give David Pearson, his due for a whole nother generation of fan who never got a chance to see him race. And back in the day, I mean, you had to pick. You know, it's like, are you going to be a Michigan State fan or are you going to be a Michigan fan? Well, in NASCAR, are you going to be a Petty fan or are you going to be a Pearson fan?
All right, last question for next year. You ready? Which one of these drivers is going to be in the final four? Larson, Jimmy Johnson, Keselowski.
Okay, which one of those three will be in the final four? Oof. Okay, I don't think it'll be Jimmy Johnson. I think of the Keselowski versus Larson deal, I think Keselowski has a better shot.
I agree with you, and it breaks my heart, because even watching Larson race yesterday, man, I love that kid, but God, it's either Wrecker or Checker, isn't it? There's no middle ground.
Well, you want to say to him, dude, I know you're fast up against the wall, running the wall, but you got to do it late in the race, because the past couple years, he wears his stuff out. I mean, it looks like he ran 500 laps at Darlington, the way that right side is all, mashed in and scuffed up, and he cuts down a tire and then blows his day. So, it's all part of the fun and excitement. And, it's hard to believe 90 days, and basically we're going to be at Daytona. And then you throw about another 4.5 months after that, we'll be at Michigan for the June race. So
it's crazy, man.
A lot of excitement coming for 2019, a lot of great storylines. And, in Detroit, so much of it, it was so cool to see Edsel Ford in victory lane. And, his passion is really, in all that, takes place out at the Henry Ford with the Racing in America exhibit, that's what makes racing what it is.
Oh, every time I go to Henry Ford, I still find my wife's like, "What are you doing? Why are you staring at the 9 car?" I'm like, "That's Bill Elliott's Thunderbird." I stand there just like, "Oh," and they've got Brad's car. And I'm like, "Yeah, that's cool. But that's Bill Elliott's car. That's the Talladega Missile. That's the one." That was the one. The first time I saw that, we're taping this, I say, I went, "Holy shit." When he drove that car at Talladega. Oh my God. That was amazing, man. All right, Matt. Hey, happy Thanksgiving, man. Enjoy this break. And, get ready. I'm sure there's more coming.
Absolutely. Hey, man, thanks for having me on. You guys have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you, buddy.